This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The University of Minnesota's Humphrey Institute held a program this past fall which examined the differences in taxing over the last couple years in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Called Border Wars, the program featured the insights of Wisconsin Department of Revenue Secretary Richard Chandler and Minnesota's Commissioner of Revenue Myron Franz. The program is introduced by the moderator, Humphrey Institute Professor Larry Jacobs.
The idea for this program today originated with a remarkable election in 2010. In 2010, we had a competitive election in Wisconsin and a squeaker in Minnesota that brought to power governors with very, very different visions. It was almost as if we're looking at a governor from the South and a governor from the upper Midwest, beholden to a kind of progressive historical tradition. Very striking when you think about Minnesota and Wisconsin because, of course, these are states that share a lot in terms of heritage. Families have property or are split between the two. And you've got many other similarities other than football. Really quite striking to then see these governors come in power and pursue very different directions. And today we're going to dig in on the economic policies and try to address the question of which of these governors is pursuing a set of policies that are putting their states on a trajectory for economic growth in terms of jobs, business growth, quality of life, and so forth. Answering that question in the short term is hard, and I think we'll hear both of our esteemed guests make that point. It takes time to evaluate, but it's also the case that decisions made back 5 or 20 years ago had a big impact on today. So the question we're going to wrestle with today is this moment in Minnesota and Wisconsin, where they're taking such different policy directions, one of those pivot points that leads to accelerated prosperity and growth and quality of life or not? And I'm very pleased to have with us the Secretary of Department of Revenue from Wisconsin, Richard Chandler, and the Commissioner of Revenue from Minnesota, Myron Franz. This is going to be an informal conversation, so I'm going to invite each of them to come up and join me here. They're going to make some opening comments. We're going to talk for a while, and then I'm going to invite you to fill out these cards and send them forward, and we're going to get to as many as possible. And as I mentioned, I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to make some opening comments as to what you see as the main themes in terms of the economic trajectory in your state, and particularly in comparison to the neighboring state. Mr. Chandler, would you like to begin?
Thanks to the Humphrey School for putting on this forum, and thanks to you, Professor Jacobs, for moderating. And this is, I think, a very important and timely topic. As you mentioned, Minnesota and Wisconsin really form one region. I've got a lot of friends and some relatives over on the Minnesota side of the border, and there's lots of interaction. I think another thing you said is very true. Both states really have a great quality of life. And if you look at national rankings, we both rank very well in a number of areas. Both have great K-12 higher education systems. We do well on things like education test scores, college entrance scores, graduation rates, great recreational opportunities. If you look at measures of health, poverty, environmental quality, we both rank very well. At the same time, I think it's accurate to say that both states have historically ranked as relatively high tax states. And in Wisconsin right now, we're really trying to do everything we can to encourage job creation, to get the economy going. We've looked at what factors are important in terms of creating a good business climate in a state, and as I talk to businesses, I hear people talk about the importance of workforce, education. Taxes and regulations are often very high on the list. People talk about infrastructure and then just general quality of life. So all of those things are important. In Wisconsin, as we look at our strengths and weaknesses, we've historically ranked very well in terms of having a top-notch workforce, good education system, good overall quality of life. We haven't ranked well on taxes, and we've really identified our relatively high taxes as a factor that has hurt our business climate. So we've been working on reducing taxes, reforming our tax system, and one of the things I keep in mind is a conversation I had a few years ago with person at a large multinational company with a lot of employees in Wisconsin. And he said, you know, we make a good product. We can charge a little more than our competitors because we've got a better product. But we're always aware of the fact that we can't charge too much more or we'll price ourselves out of the market. And he went on to say, my advice to Wisconsin is you've got a great product, but if you charge too much in taxes, you're going to price yourselves out of the market. We've really taken that to heart, and we've passed some major tax reforms in the last couple of years. We've reduced individual income taxes, cut rates in all brackets, but with a focus on reducing middle-class rates. We've passed some major new business tax incentives. We've got a new manufacturing and agriculture tax credit, which will really help businesses in those fields, which have been the twin drivers of Wisconsin's economy. We focused on controlling spending so that we're able to cut taxes in a sustainable way, and we're focused on reducing individual income taxes, business taxes, controlling property taxes. Wisconsin took this same approach in the late 1980s, 1990s. We saw good results. Our incomes and our job growth increased faster than the national average. I think states such as Indiana more recently have seen good results with this approach. So we really think it's the thing we need to do to encourage job creation in the state. And I guess I'd say to people in Minnesota, we would hope that individuals and businesses would take a look at Wisconsin. I think you'd find we have a great quality of life with a tax system that's getting more and more competitive. And maybe I'd sum up our approach by kind of blending the slogans of a couple of companies. We've got a major national retailer, Kohl's, that's headquartered in Wisconsin. And, of course, you've got a fine company here in Target. What I'd say is come to Wisconsin, and I'd blend their two slogans and say, come to Wisconsin. Our slogan is expect great things and pay less. So that's our approach, and that's the tack we're taking on this whole issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chandler. Myron France, would you like to make some opening comments?
Thank you for this opportunity here at the Humphrey School. We've been here a number of different times over the years. I have a lot of faces I recognize in the crowd, and they're a friendly crowd, Secretary Chandler, I guarantee. But they're a serious crowd. They're really good thinkers, and they really have time and time again forced policymakers in Minnesota to think, you know, deep thoughts and long-term thoughts. So I guess in my sort of opening, I'd like to talk a little bit about somewhat the same way that you started off, Mr. Secretary, and that is the governor asked me to travel around the state the last several years and talk to Minnesotans about jobs, the economy, and taxes, obviously. And one of the things that I heard was that whether it's from a business, the business people were saying the same thing that farmers and students and mothers and teachers were saying, and that is opportunity. We want opportunities for people to succeed. And they meant that to include such things as an effective education system and better training programs. They wanted to make sure that people had access to health care and affordable health care. They wanted us to have a commitment to job growth and to also a commitment to our infrastructure, our aging roads and transit system. So Governor Dayton, when he was elected, decided part of his goal was to invest in these kinds of opportunities to help Minnesota's economy grow now and for the future. Minnesota right now is the fifth fastest growing economy in the United States, and we think in part that's due as a result of the investments that we've been making in Minnesota. During this last legislative session, Governor Dayton and the DFL legislature balanced the budget. They eliminated a $627 million deficit. They invested $1.6 billion in the state of Minnesota, and they also created a surplus for the next biennium. And they supported all that with real revenue. And one of the differences we're going to talk about today is the idea of revenues and how much revenue do you need to support your business activities, or how much revenue do you need to invest in your state. But I just want to take one brief moment to remind us all where we were in 2010 when both these governors took over. In Minnesota, we faced a $6.2 billion deficit. Our unemployment had reached, I think it was 8.3% in Minnesota, which was the highest in decades. After the 2011 legislative session, we had a $2.7 billion debt to pay to the schools. And prior to 2013, we had faced 9 deficit years out of 11. So the current budget that the governor proposed and the legislature adopted, we believe, is both balanced and sustainable, and in the long term, more fair. We invested $485 million in education, including early childhood education, all-day kindergarten, special education. We invested $250 million in higher education, which included a tuition freeze and also included more money for the state grant program. We believe we made our tax system more fair by making it more progressive. We also fulfilled our partnership to cities and counties by investing for the first time in a decade in our local governments by increasing local government aid to help them reduce their reliance and dependence on property taxes, and property taxes that are something that are sensitive to every state. One of the things that we also did was to eliminate some tax preferences for some corporations. And our goal was to make sure that more Minnesota companies paid taxes and they paid the same tax rate as other Minnesota companies. We invested in job growth with the Destination Medical Center in Rochester at the Mayo Clinic, which we think is going to benefit the entire region. We invested in the 3M expansion of its laboratory facilities in Maple Grove. We invested in the Mall of America expansion in Bloomington, in the new Emerson plant in Brooklyn Park, and in the Baxter plant in Brooklyn Park, and Emerson plant in Shakopee. We've seen Toro expand. We've seen Shutterfly come here. We obviously are investing in a new Viking stadium. It is all these things that we think are combined by making these investments and by supporting them with real revenue that we think will put Minnesota on the path to continued economic growth. Right now, our per capita income ranks the 11th highest in the country, and we expect that to continue. We hope that continues. As we worked with this with the legislature and the governor, we made these investments in Minnesota, but we also did a couple of other things. We expanded Medicaid to 235,000 Minnesotans. We increased taxes on tobacco to reduce smoking, and especially for young people. We enacted and now have a health care exchange, MenSure, to provide access to health care, affordable health care. And we provided marriage equality for all citizens in Minnesota. So as I close, I just want to say that we believe that these steps will put Minnesota on the right path, but we also believe that this is not a zero-sum game. We believe that this region needs to grow. And the fact of the matter is, when Wisconsin does well, Minnesota does well as Iowa and the Dakotas. I think it's critical for this region to develop the reputation of having incredibly trained workforce, great education opportunities, great health care, and expanding jobs so that we all benefit. And these borders are not barriers, and they're opportunities for people to go back and forth and provide good job opportunities and education opportunities for all. So I look forward to working with Secretary Chandler today and having a discussion about where we go from here.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. You're listening to a program produced this past fall by the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota. It features Minnesota Commissioner of Revenue, Myron Franz, and Wisconsin Revenue Secretary, Richard Chandler, talking about the different tax visions of each state. The moderator is Professor Larry Jacobs.
I want to ask each of you a set of questions, and then we'll get into a conversation between the two of you. Commissioner Franz, you've talked, and the governor made, I think, a pretty eloquent presentation to Minnesota Business Partnership a few weeks ago about the administration's business-friendly approach, creating a pro-job growth, pro-business expansion investments in Minnesota. But recently, there was a survey done by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and in it, businesses reported back at the lowest level that the chambers found in terms of how they see the business environment. So, for instance, only 37% of the Minnesota businesses surveyed described Minnesota as having a good business climate. 26% described it as a bad business climate, and those are all lows. And one of the overwhelming findings in the survey of 350 Minnesota businesses by the chamber is that businesses found that the administration and the DFL legislature did not know what business needs. Why do you think that is?
Those studies are really important to do. I mean, we do really need, as I learned, you need to get out and ask people what they think and what's important to them. And that disconnect is disconcerting. I think one of the things that for me, having worked in business, both being a tax lawyer for almost 30 years and running a business, I just can't help but think about what do our policies do for the business person? What is this new regulation or this new fact sheet? Is someone going to be able to read it and understand it and apply it? So I think that both the legislature and the governor, we have to continually work to try to make sure businesses have access to tell us what problems they want us to solve, and that we listen to those problems and we actually try to solve them. I think reducing the permitting time and some regulations early on in the governor's tenure was one of those things, because as Secretary Chandler mentioned, regulations and business delays can be a real problem for a number of people. So, I mean, I understand that there is sometimes this disconnect, but I will say that there is a CFO from one of our major Fortune 500 companies who's been here for a few years, and he said, you know, sometimes people forget how good we really have it. And I'm not saying to discount these issues at all, but I am saying that in the context, Minnesota business climate is continuing to improve, and we'll do whatever we can to make it better.
So let me just dig in on that. You described it as a disconcerting disconnect between the administration's hopes and then the feedback they're getting from the business community. One of the areas that the DFL legislature and governor worked in was increasing taxes in the last session. One of those taxes, just to pull out one, is a business sales tax on storage and warehousing. Now, those are businesses that operate, as you know, with a small margin, and some of them are quite movable. So when Mr. Chandler says, Wisconsin is open for business and we offer a better deal for you, doesn't that tax create an incentive for Minnesota businesses in that part of our economy to head over east to Wisconsin?
Well, I would agree with that argument if that kind of a tax was a top on somebody's list. One of the things that I learned in running a business, and I've heard from business people, taxes are important. They clearly are. But so is an educated workforce. So is the infrastructure. So is the healthcare. So I really do believe that taxes are on every business person's list. They should be, but they're not number one, two, or three. I don't know where they are. It depends on each particular business. We can't ignore these companies that are in these margins where that can make a big difference, and it really cuts into their profit. And it's something, actually, I had a meeting this morning with some warehouse folks talking about the warehouse tax. But I will tell you that you simply can't let your tax policy be guided by those kinds of arguments, because people said that 30 and 40 years ago in Minnesota when we implemented the sales tax, when we increased the income tax. And we've seen every time you implement a new tax or a new rate, well, it's going to kill everything and everyone's going to leave. Well, look at Minnesota right now. I mean, I just think you have to look at the big picture. And I think business people look at the big picture.
Thank you very much. Secretary Chandler, you make a great case about the strengths in Wisconsin, and there's obviously a lot to that. And yet, I think there's quite a debate in Wisconsin about why isn't the economy and job growth doing better. So on the theme of why isn't Wisconsin doing better, you know, there's some startling statistics that have come out about slow job growth that is lagging behind the national average and lagging behind what's going on in Minnesota. What's your explanation for why job growth is not, at average and up to Minnesota speed?
Well, I think we're really on a good trend in Wisconsin. We've had the best job growth in the last 2 years that we've had in the past decade. And if you look at a number of indicators that tell you how things are going to play out in the future, you see some really good things. You mentioned the survey of Minnesota businesses. There was a survey of Wisconsin business owners and executives recently asking, is Wisconsin on the right track in terms of its business policies? 94% said yes. In 2010, that was in single digits. CEO Magazine just ranked us as the 17th best business climate in the country. Site Selection Magazine had us 13th. Those are both much, much better than 3-4 years ago. We felt some negative consequences from some tax increases that were imposed in 2009. In 2009, the top individual income tax rate was increased, some business taxes were increased, our capital gains exemption was pared back, and there was a lot of concern about that. I think we felt some negative effects from having done that. And it takes a while to turn that around. Hopefully people, and I think those indicators are mentioned to indicate that people understand that things have turned around, that it's different. So we are seeing positive job growth.
I just occurred to another one.
CNBC ranked us as the fifth fastest growing state as far as manufacturing jobs, which are good paying jobs, lots of opportunities in that field where we've historically been strong. So there are good signs that we're on the upswing.
The business BSL came out, which is kind of the gold standard of quarterly job growth. They came out and tagged Wisconsin as having a job growth over the past 3 months of 1.1%, which was 34th in the country. So if you could just dig in on what would explain that. The same survey had Minnesota as one of the top job growth areas. So if we're looking for, you know, the difference that policy might make, are we seeing some kind of sign there that Wisconsin is lagging so far behind?
No, I think, the explanation would be that's at this point in time. Okay. We're doing better now than we did by that same measure a year or two ago. So the trend is clearly up. And we want to do better than the national average. We're focusing a lot of attention on that. Commissioner Franz mentioned a number of good things that are going on in Minnesota in terms of balanced budget, investments in key priorities like education and health. We're doing the same thing in Wisconsin. We faced a $3.6 billion projected budget deficit in 2011 when the Walker administration took office. We turned that around. We ended up that biennial budget cycle with a $600 million surplus. And we've put in place some policies that will allow us to control spending in the future at both the state level and the local level. So we're working on getting spending under control while still making some of those priority investments, getting spending under control so we can invest in priority areas but also reduce taxes, because we think you have to be doing both. But the upshot of the difficult decisions that we made in the 2011 budget cycle was that we reduced spending. We didn't increase taxes at the state level. We didn't see any spike in local property taxes. Property taxes were stable. We didn't have any mass layoffs in state government. We didn't have any service cuts at the state or local level. We got through that budget cycle and addressed that projected budget deficit and put ourselves on a firm fiscal footing. That meant when we moved into the 2013 budget debate, the 2013-15 budget cycle, we could talk about what to do in terms of tax cuts and investing in education and healthcare. We've made major investments in those areas, but at the same time have reduced taxes just in this budget cycle by close to $1 billion. So we want to do both, and again, I think it's important that we have investments in the priority areas, but at a level that doesn't price our state out of the market, that keeps taxes reasonable and shows people some progress. I mean, people want to see what the trend is, and I think we can say with great confidence in Wisconsin that we're poised for further tax reductions in the future. Finances have been stabilized. The economy is growing. We've cut taxes in the last two budget cycles. We'll do more of that in the future. And I'm not sure that Minnesota can say it's in the same position. So if people are looking at what the expected trend is, what the commitment for the future is, we're going to keep working on our tax burden and getting it down.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. On today's program, we're featuring a University of Minnesota Humphrey Institute discussion called Border Wars, examining tax visions in Minnesota and Wisconsin. The main speakers are the heads of the revenue departments for both states.
Let's dig in for a second on the kind of business portfolio. What does each state offer? And you've made the case that lowering taxes is the number one kind of draw for a business, along with the history of Wisconsin's strengths in a number of areas. Commissioner Franz has made the case that the investments are really what makes Minnesota attractive. And so these are very different economic growth strategies. Now, digging in on the Wisconsin case, It is striking. There are investments being made in education, but in terms of new money going into higher education and in terms of K to 12 education, Minnesota is spending at least 2/3 more. So there's a trade-off here. And, you know, when you kind of look around at the some of those national rankings, such as the Forbes ranking that just came out, they talk about economic climate, and they've got Minnesota at number 9 and Wisconsin substantially
number
behind.
Number 8, actually.
Well, that was overall, but just in terms of economic climate.
I just want to make sure the numbers are right.
Yeah, no, numbers are important. Just in terms of kind of the economic climate that would include the portfolio that we're talking about, you know, place like Forbes, I'm not saying it's the only ranking body out there, but, you know, how do you size up the netting out of, you're cutting prices, but you're also not investing in areas where I think a lot of folks who study economic development would say, education, that is the future.
Yeah, no, I think we have historically invested in those areas. We're doing so now. We'll do more of that in the future. But it's got to be a balance. And talking about rankings, I mean, look at the U.S. News and World Report rankings of the strengths of university systems. The University of Wisconsin ranks very, very well. We're one of the top 5 university systems in the country in terms of attracting federal research dollars. We're producing graduates in the science and technology areas at a rate that's well above the national average. So there's lots of good things going on in education. There will continue to be. But I think we're very well aware of the fact that you've got to strike the right balance. So I just want to make it clear, workforce is important, education is important, infrastructure is important. But it's got to come at a price that doesn't price you out of the market. And we're trying to shape that balance so that more people will find our tax environment attractive as well as those other things. I guess in terms of the approaches that the two states have taken, one of the things is we passed our tax reductions. We've got lots of legislators out there touting those, bragging about them. I look at Minnesota, it looks like there's maybe a little bit of buyer's remorse. I mean, some of the tax increases that were passed, people are talking about which ones should we undo, when are we going to revisit these, a little bit of second-guessing taking place. There's not any second-guessing with us. It seems like there's some second-guessing here, maybe almost as much as with the Christian Ponder draft selection, you know, a lot of debate.
I was just waiting for that to come up.
A lot of debate about, but there is, I think in terms of the policies that were put in place, there's discussion about whether those need to be undone, modified. People are very comfortable in Wisconsin with the approach we're taking.
So Commissioner Franz, isn't there buyer's remorse in terms of some of the sales taxes, particularly the business-to-business sales taxes on, let's say, the storage and warehousing? Is that an example where there's a kind of second thought, maybe some buyer's remorse, as the Secretary just pointed out?
Oh, I think there's always buyer's remorse when you change taxes. And I think that this is no different than any other time. But I guess you have to put it in the context. We don't see any buyer's remorse in the investments we made in education or the investments we made in job growth. We haven't seen anyone say, well, we shouldn't have invested that much in the University of Minnesota or the MinSU system. And I think people in Minnesota have been really very clear about they appreciate making investments paying taxes for investments. And one of the things that we've seen throughout the state is the fact that people see this as progress, and we have a balanced budget, we have a surplus for the next biennium, and we owed $2.7 billion to the school, and now we only owe about $238 million. So these attempts to get our financial house in order for the long term are the things that people are really resonating with. And of course, there are some folks who don't want to be the ones that have the tax increase. We understand that, and that's, I think, to be expected. But in the long haul, I think the governor and the legislature have felt that they've made the right choices to put Minnesota on a growth path.
Thank you. I want to raise a kind of a broad topic, which is how we think about government and the private sector. And there's one view out there that government is the problem, The more you pull back government, the more a private sector can prosper. There's another view which I think is clearly evident in the Dayton administration's policies, which views a partnership between the two and certain types of investments generating business and encouraging economic development. And I'm wondering if we could have a discussion about this. I'm looking at a report from Wells Fargo, and in it, it talks about public investments in public works and construction projects. And it says, and I'm quoting, several major projects, including a new stadium for the Minnesota Vikings and the development of the surrounding neighborhood, the Mayo Clinic expansion, the Mall of America additions, have the potential to significantly transform Minnesota's economy. Mr. Chandler, does government investment grow the private sector?
I think, as you said, it's got to be a partnership, and what you need to do is talk about what the appropriate mix is between the two partners. We've had some major projects in the state of Wisconsin that have been accomplished with government working with the private sector as a partner, and they've done well. We've got several major universities in the Milwaukee area, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Marquette University, the Medical College of Wisconsin. And the state has partnered with all of them on health initiatives and other initiatives. We just opened up a major new global water center in the Milwaukee area with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee as the lead educational institution, but with the state partnering to it, because Wisconsin has historically had, and particularly in the Milwaukee area, has historically had strengths with companies that deal with water flow, water purification, those types of things. We've got world leaders in that category, and the Global Water Institute will help us maintain our leadership in that area. So we've done things of that nature. I think the question always is, does the project make sense, and at what cost? And I guess the point I'm trying to get across is, we think those things are important, but we think it's important that they be done at a level that the citizens of the state find acceptable and affordable.
Nonetheless, the decision to cut taxes and to make significant cuts in the budget in the 11-12 biennium certainly reduces your opportunity to make those kind of investments that could have economic growth potential. Isn't that true?
Oh, I think, and maybe to talk a little bit about some of the budget reductions in 2011, the bulk of the savings there were in terms of making changes to the contributions that employees were expected to make to their health and insurance benefits to bring those more in line with the private sector. And also we made some changes in work rules so that governments can operate more efficiently. So they were geared towards reducing costs that didn't directly impact service levels and to doing things that allowed state and local governments to operate more efficiently. So those were the primary things that were done to get through that budget cycle. We gave local governments, while they were taking some budget reductions, we gave them the tools to operate a lot more efficiently. That's why we did not see significant service cutbacks through that period. And so we're still able to do some of the things you're talking about. Again, it's a question of finding that balance.
But just at a much lower level?
I wouldn't say a much lower level, a more affordable level, a more acceptable level to the citizens, to the business community.
So Commissioner France is kind of flipping that question. the Dayton administration, the DFL, has made quite remarkable and large investments in these economic development projects that Wells Fargo is talking about, but at the same time, we now stand out as fifth in the country in terms of our top-tier income tax bracket. Is that the right balance?
Well, you know, I think what's critical about these investments and your tax regime that you have, I mean, no one wants to pay taxes, and we'd like to have the lowest possible taxes that we can. The governor has said that repeatedly. But I think part of the reason you're seeing these investments you mentioned in the infrastructure, the partnerships with the Mayo Clinic and the Viking Stadium and the Mall of America, is that we have felt like, the governor in particular has felt like there's been a disinvestment in the last 10 years in Minnesota. And I think part of what his vision is to make sure that we find these strategic partnerships and we make the decision, because if we make the decision now, we make those hard choices, and we move these projects forward, we will see the benefits in the next 10 or 15 years. And so the key here is that you can't have these things without paying for them. One of the things that, as you know, Professor Jacobs, we do an incident study every 2 years in terms of the level of taxes that people pay in Minnesota. And our last report showed that in 2008, the middle income folks paid about 12.3% of all their taxes, of their household income to taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, and other taxes. Well, after the implementation of this 2013 budget, that is now going to be about 12%. So we've reduced the overall tax burden on the middle-income folks. In 2008, the top 2% paid about 9.7% of their income to state and local taxes, and now that is at 11%. So we feel like this change in our tax structure makes the system more progressive, makes it more fair, and it more evenly distributes the opportunities that we need to invest in Minnesota.
So as you're doing your analysis, what's your estimate of the number of jobs and businesses lost to Wisconsin due to the fact of our high top-end, top-tier rate, which is now almost 10%, state taxes and our gift taxes being so much higher in Wisconsin? Do you expect there to be kind of an out-migration from Minnesota to a better deal in Wisconsin?
No.
Have you done the analysis and you're not finding?
Yes, we've studied a lot, this whole idea of tax migration because of tax policy. As you know, there have been studies for the last 10 or 20 years trying to discern where is that sweet spot. When do you raise a tax rate or a tax to the point where people will actually get up and move? Well, we've not been able to find any indication that there's a direct correlation, and that makes kind of common sense. People move for a lot of reasons. They move for health reasons, for weather reasons, and job reasons. And clearly, sometimes the discussion is that tax is one of those reasons. Well, it's really hard to discern that. We haven't been able to really see that in the research. So I think one of the things that we hear these concerns and these stories, and we want to be sensitive to those stories. We don't want anyone to leave, even if it's to our brother state or sister state in Wisconsin. But the key for us is to try to make policies where people feel like the taxes they're paying are making the investments that they want to make. And if that's true, then we think the equation will be that they'll stay.
I've got a bunch of questions here from the audience I wanted to get to.
And maybe I just... Before we get to that, I would just
Secretary
say that probably
Chandler.
Is a clear distinction between the two approaches, because we do believe that there is a point at which people move for tax reasons. I mean, they look at a lot of things, but taxes is pretty high on the list.
Do you have studies to support that?
Well, we've got lots of input from businesses.
I understand that, and I think everybody in this debate hears from businesses,
yeah.
They hear from labor. I mean, there are a lot of different interests with views.
And
do
I would refer,
studies?
For example, for a more sort of systematic study of what businesses and individuals say. There was a series of studies done by a professor at the University of Wisconsin, John Udell, over a period of years, that quantified the factors that businesses and individuals thought were important. Workforce and education were high on the list. Taxes was next after those two. And I think you can see it in a lot of different ways as well. And I think, you know, if you're hearing from lots of businesses, if you're seeing studies like those Professor Udell studies, if you're seeing studies from a number of national organizations that say that taxes are important, it's something that you should take into account. It is real. And, you know, when we raised our taxes in the early 1980s, there were businesses that left the state or moved some of their operations out of the state citing that reason. We saw a downturn in 2009 when taxes were raised. So it's definitely a reality, and I think that states kind of ignore it at their peril.
Yeah, I think part of the debate here is if taxes are raised, where's the money invested? If taxes are raised and the money's not invested in areas that produce long-term cross-generation economic growth, then yeah, it can be a drag. I think the research, though, is it's one, there's, as you both have said, there's a lag to it. But the other part is it's not a simple equation.
And the Udell study you've talked about, and there's some debate about it, but some folks point to it to emphasize the importance of investment and that it is a kind of a balance, and in a way that's not too dissimilar from what Commissioner Franz has been talking about.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a balance. I think if you have outstanding services and sky-high taxes, you're going to be in trouble. If you have rock-bottom taxes and miserable services, you're going to be in trouble. So the question is, where is the balance between there? We think our taxes have been too high. We think we're going to be better off with them coming down, although they already are lower than Minnesota's.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. You're listening to a program produced this past fall by the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota. It features Minnesota Commissioner of Revenue, Myron Franz, and Wisconsin Revenue Secretary, Richard Chandler, talking about the different tax visions of each state. The moderator is Professor Larry Jacobs.
To pick up on this theme about the balance and the mix between investments and education and infrastructure, along with tax rates, we've got a question here which is really focusing on the education component of that mix, asking it, now that Wisconsin is lagging behind Minnesota in terms of the amount of investment in K-12 and higher education, will new high technology manufacturing jobs come to Wisconsin if the workforce is no longer able to master the necessary skills or to perform at the same level as in Minnesota?
Oh, I think absolutely. And we've got a well above average high school graduation rate. We have outstanding technical colleges, which we invested more money in this budget cycle. The governor has put a lot of emphasis on workforce development initiatives to improve our job training at high schools, at technical colleges, through other programs. So we have historically had an outstanding, highly skilled workforce, and it's going to get better because of all those initiatives. That is clearly a priority area, and part of it is putting more money in, part of it is deploying that more effectively, part of it is making students aware of the opportunities that are out there and of the need to acquire the skills. You know, one thing we've found is that students don't have enough information about all the great opportunities there are in advanced manufacturing these days, where we've got employers who could hire more people if people with the right skills were available. Well, we're working to get kids in high schools taking tours to businesses on a regular basis so they understand what kinds of skills they need, what kind of opportunities there are. All of those things together are going to mean we're going to continue to have an outstanding workforce in the future.
Just to absolutely cinch this down, the fact that Minnesota is investing so much more right now in K-12 and higher education, two-thirds or more, that doesn't strike you as a kind of bad place to be at this point, thinking forward to the future?
Well, I think if you look at the spending levels that we're at, whether it's K-12, whether it's higher education, we're within the same range. I mean, the question is, how much of an increase should you put in at any given time? But we think we're going to maintain our outstanding quality with the levels of investment that we're putting in. And I just want to emphasize, I don't want people to get the impression that we're not investing in education. We are. We put more money into education at all levels in this budget cycle than we had in the last budget cycle. We've got very respectable funding levels. But we're also very aware of the fact to make sure that money is effectively spent and that it's targeted to the right places. So we're working on that, too.
So just to underscore your point, looking at numbers from the beginning of the Dayton and Walker administrations, that is from January 11, Wisconsin's invested about $12 billion in K-12. Minnesota has invested $20 billion. It's a big difference. In higher ed, Wisconsin invested $2.1 billion or so, and Minnesota is invested about $4 billion. So these are big differences, and I guess the question that is being raised is that the right balance as you're putting it, or is that putting Wisconsin at a disadvantage if you think of this as a kind of important moment towards the future in terms of growth?
Well, and part of it depends on not just how much you're increasing, but where you're starting from. But I think in terms of per-pupil spending levels at K-12, we're similar. I think Wisconsin might be a little higher. In terms of spending on the university, we're similar. And, you know, the University of Wisconsin ranks very, very highly, and it's going to continue to rank high. I'm absolutely confident of that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. On today's program, we're featuring a University of Minnesota Humphrey Institute discussion called Border Wars, examining tax visions in Minnesota and Wisconsin. The main speakers are the heads of the revenue departments for both states.
Let me ask about another question that's come up from our audience several times, and I've been skirting around it, and I put it to both of you. What are the prospects for renewed income tax reciprocity? We appear to have missed another October 1 deadline.
Well, we did miss the deadline, didn't we?
And I've got a little bit of a history on this because I was Secretary of Revenue in Wisconsin at one time before my present stint in 2001 and 2002, and in that period, Governor Ventura said he was going to end income tax reciprocity, and we asked what the concern was. He said, "Well, you know, we don't get the payment. You net out. Wisconsin owes Minnesota some money, Minnesota owes Wisconsin some money, you net out, and Wisconsin owes a net amount to Minnesota every year." And Governor Ventura said, you know, you don't pay that until December for the prior tax year because it takes that long to make all the calculations. I don't like waiting that long without getting interest. I'm going to ask you to pay interest. So we agreed to do that. And I got a letter from the Commissioner of Revenue in Minnesota saying, thank you, and this will assure that we have reciprocity in place for many years to come. And many turned out to be seven because it was then canceled by Minnesota in 2009. And the two things that Governor Pawlenty said then were, number one, we know you're paying interest, but we don't like having to wait for the payment for cash flow reasons. And secondly, the way the payment is calculated is based on a study that was done some years ago. It's a little bit outmoded. We think we need a new study. So when I started at the Department of Revenue in January 2011, I sent a letter to Minnesota saying we'd like to get reciprocity back in place. Let's talk about these issues. We agreed to make periodic payments rather than waiting till December following each tax year to make our payment. We agreed to make periodic payments and then a final adjustment payment in December, which would go one way or the other depending on what the final calculation was. So we agreed to address that issue. I think Minnesota found that to be acceptable. We did a new study, and both states basically agreed within a very small amount of about the amount of money that would be owed. But then another issue was raised, and Commissioner Franz called me up at one point and said, you know, we realized that when we canceled the agreement, we collected $6 million more in taxes for Minnesota citizens. So if we go back to put reciprocity in place, we lose that $6 million. We want you to send us money to do that. And basically, we regard that a little bit like asking for a ransom. I mean, our legislators have said, you know, we want to bend over backwards to get this back in place, but we're not going to send $6 million to Minnesota to reverse a tax increase that Minnesota imposed on its own taxpayers, which by the way, that payment isn't required, for instance, of North Dakota under Minnesota's reciprocity agreement with North Dakota. So that's the sticking point. And it may be symptomatic of an approach that doesn't put as much emphasis as we do on lowering tax burdens or making tax paying more convenient. That's what we think is important. So if Minnesota would drop that sort of newly found demand that propped up after 2009 when the agreement was canceled, we'd get a new agreement in place. And talking about one region, cooperation and all, it would be great. It would be very, very helpful for the thousands of taxpayers across the border.
So Commissioner Franz, have we kidnapped Wisconsin and asking for a ransom?
Well, Secretary Chandler's description is close, but not quite accurate. The tax that we insist on was enacted in 1961. And what happens is in Minnesota, as in 39 of the 43 other states that have an income tax, we limit our tax credit for taxes paid in another state to the amount of taxes that would have been paid in the state of residence. So if you're a Minnesota resident, you go to another state and earn income there, and you pay tax on that income to that state, and that tax rate is higher than what you would have paid in Minnesota, we only give you the tax credit up to the amount that you would have paid in Minnesota. As I mentioned, 39 out of 43 states do that. We've done it since about 1961. And so the key is, why would Minnesota want to subsidize the higher tax rates in Wisconsin? One of the things that a lot of people don't know is that middle-income taxpayers have a higher tax, effective tax rate in Wisconsin. If you're a family of four and you make about $50,000 a year, you will pay about $700 more in income tax in Wisconsin than you will in Minnesota. So and this issue has gone back to 1996. There was about a $2 million discrepancy back in 1996, and now it's about $6 million. So the question is, does it make sense? Is it in the best interest of Minnesota to subsidize Wisconsin for its higher tax rates on the middle-income people so that reciprocity can be had? Now, we certainly support reciprocity, and I think one thing that Secretary Chandler left out, the day the benchmark studies that we did this year were released on March 1, and on March 4th, I sent a letter and a proposal to Wisconsin saying, here's an agreement incorporating all of the new payment schedules, the new interest calculations, and by the way, it's going to require that you compensate Minnesota for any revenue loss. And so that we're ready to sign that agreement. We think it's fair. We don't think it's wise for Minnesota to subsidize Wisconsin for its higher middle-income tax rate.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. You've been listening to the program Border Wars, produced this past fall by University of Minnesota's Humphrey Institute. It examined the different approaches to taxation in Wisconsin and Minnesota since 2010, when both states elected new governors. The speakers included Minnesota Commissioner of Revenue, Myron Franz, and Wisconsin Revenue Secretary, Richard Chandler. The moderator was Professor Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroub, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos, and if you'd like to comment on our program or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.